Jesus. The yellow light!
And I'm walking here!
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app, which now allows you to see inside of our studio. It's actually kind of creepy. I'm looking at the camera right now. Producer Jackson's looking at his camera but doesn't realize it doesn't get turned on until he turns on his microphone. And now you can see him on. No, you're supposed, that was your cue to hit the microphone so that it would come on.
It's on now.
Okay, now you can see him. A judge said no to evidence in a triple homicide on a decision that we think might be the first time it has ever been made, huh? You might have to get used to this. It's what's trending.
What's trending?
He's confused by having to push his microphone on, and now he doesn't know what other buttons to push. So there was, and I remember covering this story a few years ago. It was back in 2021. There was a triple homicide outside of this sports bar in Des Moines. And three people got killed, but also three people were injured. It was a big deal. And there were rumors at the time that there was a lot of video evidence. We didn't see any of it, or at least I didn't see any of it. But at the time, there was a lot of folks saying, was caught on video, and not even necessarily surveillance, but like witnesses were there. We don't know how it all started, but this is what we're hearing. So it was a big deal. And finally, it's getting in front of a judge. Now, turns out there is, in fact, lots of video. And some of the video was, in fact, caught by witnesses. One who uploaded it to Snapchat. It's 10 seconds long. And they're going over what kind of evidence they're going to admit into this trial. The defense's expert witness says he used an AI software on one of the videos because of how low resolution it was. He said it contained substantial motion blur. And so you put it through this AI software and it makes it sharper. It gives some definition. It smooths out some of the edges on objects in the video. And if you didn't do it, you would have basically something that's really, really fuzzy, blocky. And I've used similar software to see if you can sort of upconvert video and make it just a little bit better, or photos and whatnot. And it's pretty good. It's not great, but it's pretty decent. It all kind of depends on what it is you're feeding it. And they tried to get this admitted into evidence, and the judge said, no, thank you. Hard pass. He tossed it. And King 5 says it's the first ruling of this type. And it's this King 5, so it's probably the 17th ruling. But, I mean, we obviously know that this doesn't happen a lot because we haven't heard about it a lot. But it's something that you have to assume, given the explosion of not just accessibility of AI technology, but excitement around AI technology. Turns out, behind the scenes, there's ongoing conversations via some committee that has been created locally, but I'm assuming that you're seeing this happen all across the country, of law professionals, like professors, lawyers, judges, prosecutors, defense also represented, all getting together and trying to figure out what will the guidelines be, what will the guidance be around using AI in the courtroom. Now, Ryan Callow is a law professor over at the UW, and he told King 5 this.
You can't use a process like this and feel comfortable that what is being represented is necessarily what actually happened. We need to be concerned about the use of AI in the investigative stage. We need to be concerned about its use, in trial as evidence. And we need to be concerned about its use, by litigants or judges to make decisions.
So, yes, what he just said is certainly true, that we should be hesitant or at least aware, right? Just make sure you're aware what I'm looking at is not necessarily 100% the truth, quote unquote. And sometimes it's not reliable. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's not, and sometimes it doesn't really make a difference. For me, as I'm thinking about this, wouldn't you then just take into account the fact that what you're looking at, whether you're doing so as a juror or as a judge, you're looking at it knowing that it went through AI, and you can argue why it should either be accepted or shouldn't be accepted. We do things like this all the time, just not with AI. You've got a witness up there. Witness says, I saw so-and-so shoot so-and-so. It's like, everyone's name is so-and-so. This is going to get very confusing. And so, obviously, one side says, you should trust this witness. And then the other guy says, well, hold on. This witness seems like he's telling you the truth, but he also wears glasses. And that means his eyesight is an issue. And should we really trust him to be so specific on what he saw when he was 50 feet away from the shooting that took place? We say that, and then guess what happens? The jury considers both arguments. They consider what they heard coming from the witness, and they say either, yeah, I trust this person, or I don't trust this person, or I think they're telling the truth. Let's look at all the other evidence and try to all figure this out together as a whole. That's what we do. You see, at least, you know, every so often, it kind of depends on the trial, but there are recreations of certain crimes, like a shooting, so you can see what angle the police think the bullet came from, and that might provide some evidence that could, you know, find someone guilty, find the actual suspect who's, in fact, the murderer. That's the kind of the same thing. And we all go into it, again, knowing, well, this isn't exactly what happened. It was recreated by professionals. And, you know, it seems legit, or I don't think it could have happened like that in real life. That just doesn't seem possible. That's what juries do, or judges do, all the time. So why would AI be any different? If you know it's being presented, having gone through an AI system. You can't, I don't think you can hold that back and pretend that you didn't do it. But I think if you're open about it, I don't really think it's an issue. King 5 says, Professor Kahlo is currently part of a task force working to help state judges navigate issues and problems they might encounter and how to address them. He said AI should be treated like a visual aid as opposed to being used like eyewitness testimony.
I think it's going to take more comfort on the part of the judiciary with the technology itself, and they want to feel like their audience, or the audience of the technology, the jury, is sophisticated enough to understand that this is guesswork.
Okay, they're not that dumb. I mean, some are. But they're not that dumb. You don't think they understand that when we say, do they know what CGI is? Do they know that when they see, like, a Marvel movie, that most of that stuff didn't actually happen? They're just doing it in front of a green screen?
It was a little demeaning.
Right? I mean, just like, oh, you know, they got to be sophisticated enough to figure out that AI is artificial and intelligence. Yeah, we got it. I got it. You mean we shouldn't look at an AI software and consider it the same as an eyewitness account? Yeah, dummy. I understand how things work. I know what people are, what an AI program is. I don't understand. It seems like there's this new hip technology that they can't quite figure out, and they're trying to make a big... It's been around for a long time, AI, in various forms. It's been around for a very long time. This, to me, seems much ado about nothing. Look, you can resist AI all you want. It's going to come in a big way and take over most of our lives in some way, shape, or form. That is just the inevitability. That's what happens when you come up with insane technological advances that can, of course, be used for bad, but we hope be used for good. There was the conversation a few months ago about how, you know, maybe some lawyers are going to start throwing their legal arguments through like ChatGPT or something. And, you know, is that ethical? Should we do? Well, a human is still going to look it over. You would accept that as some kind of, you know, the doctor doesn't take an x-ray. An x-ray technician does. And then the x-ray tech gives the x-ray to the doctor to then determine what's going on. That's the same way I look at this. You're putting it into a computer software, it spits out something, and then you're reviewing it in your expert opinion. It can make things go much faster for you. So I don't know, maybe this is generational. It's like when some folks didn't really want to adopt email, they still wanted to write letters because they didn't grow up with that technology. They didn't know what it was, you know, sort of what the implications would be. This doesn't seem all that difficult to figure out. That said, I don't trust AI at all, and I think it's going to make life worse for everybody. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the media?
So Sage Steele, was she a big deal at any point over at ESPN?
I think she was like one of the lead anchors SportsCenter. Yeah.
She was a big deal. She is a conservative, and no one really knew it at the time, so no one liked her on the right. And now that she's come out and is a conservative, or at least presents herself in that way, they're all like, oh, she was the best. I love everything she does. So I'm assuming she was competent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch SportsCenter a ton because I think there's better sports shows to watch, but she was fine. Okay.
Someone's pretentious over there. I watch Fox Sports. I don't watch ESPN. I do. If it's soccer, I watch Fox Sports. So she did an interview back in 2021 with Joe Biden. And at the time, she said to Fox News Digital, she was given a literal script and guidance on what she could and could not say to the president, and you couldn't even change a word. And it came from up above. She believes it came from up above because they wanted to please Joe Biden.
This was about 2 months after he took office. That was an interesting experience in its own right because it was so structured, and I was told, you will say every word that we write out, you will not deviate from the script, and go to the word. Like, every single question was scripted, gone over dozens of times by many executives.
It's certainly easy for me to criticize, but the first thing I would say to myself is, like, do I really want to do that? Like, really? Is this what I got into the business to do? I'm sitting down with the president. You expect me to actually just read from a script word for word? And if I have a follow-up, I'm not allowed to ask. If I don't think this word is something that sounds like I would say it, it sounds like it was scripted, I can't change it up. Really? I mean, all of us are used to having some general guidelines around interviews in that, you know, when we interview someone, we invite them on the show, they say, what would you like to talk about? We don't say, we're not going to tell you. We're going to talk about so-and-so. We're going to talk about how Joe Biden's incompetent and can't walk up a flight of stairs. And so you get a general sense of what the interview is not just going to be about, but probably the tone that's going to take place throughout it. This obviously goes very far and is not normal. So why would she allow herself to be used in that way?
Editors and executives, absolutely. I was on script and was told not to deviate. It was very much, this is what you will ask, this is how you will say it. No follow-ups. Next. I knew that this was a lot bigger than just the wonderful editors that I worked with. This went up to the fourth floor, as we said, that were all the bosses, the top executives, the decision makers are, the president of our company, the CEO, where they all work.
So if this was just about sports and it was one of those, here's a politician pretending they know something about football or basketball or whatever, that's one thing. I probably, because that's not really it's not journalism at that point. It's just a puff piece. And, you know, sports networks will do this from time to time. But they ended up talking about how COVID was impacting the sports world, how vaccine hesitancy was impacting athletes. And he used it as an opportunity to support Major League Baseball's decision to boycott Atlanta for the All-Star game over the Georgia election reform law that people just flat out lied about. They just flat out made it up. And they were like, oh, they're trying to take the vote away from black people. Despite the fact that after that law passed, they hit record high black voters. So we know that this was all nonsense. It was absolute nonsense. And I imagine she might have wanted to say something in response to the support of the boycott, even just a follow-up, not taking a side. I have no idea how she would generally act, but maybe having a follow-up question about the implications of you taking this position on something that is kind of contentious. You're turning sports into more of a political arm of the Democrat Party. Is that the right? Like, there are plenty of follow-up questions to ask that she was not able to ask. But again, I make a distinction. If this were just about, let's say it was for the All-Star game, and it was just some goofy thing. Oh, which side are you rooting for? No one cares. Who are you looking forward to playing tonight? And no one cares. But that's what they do. I did an interview with, at the time, Seattle Mayor Ed Murray. And this was before scandal, of course, because it was when I was working for the Sounders, and I was doing the pre, half, and post game analysis for them. And it was on our sister station, and I can't remember why he was there. They were offering some sort of like community award. And they said, hey, and they knew I didn't like him particularly. You know, are you okay if we do this kind of interview? It's just stick to the basics. Don't go too specific in soccer. Just like, who's your favorite player kind of question. We need to do this for the broadcast. I'm like, okay. I'm not a journalist at that point. I'm talking about sports. It's not that big of a deal. It's like, well, here, what just happened on the game? They sucked. Okay, let me ask questions in a way that doesn't allow you to just bash them the entire time. And yeah, they didn't give me a script or anything, but they just said, keep it basic. And then when he came in, he very much tempted me not to, because he then warned me, I don't know anything. Please don't throw me under the bus here. I know how you feel about me politically. He actually said that. Just don't throw me under the bus. Just give me a bit. Can you tell me the question in advance? I go, no, but I don't know what I'm going to ask. It'll be very basic. And it wasn't very basic. I asked him about formation.
You're so mean.
He totally screwed it up. I go, what do you think of the formation? 4-3-2-1? Is that? He had no idea what I was talking about. And I go, aside from Clint Dempsey, who's your favorite player? Clint is my, they told him to say Clint Dempsey, which I knew. I'm such a jerk. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Supreme Court.
I find this curious. All of a sudden, and it really does feel like all of a sudden, we're having a conversation, or we're seeing conversations take place about the U.S. Supreme Court and whether or not Justice Sotomayor should step down now that there is a Democrat president. And there was an NBC News story earlier this morning that came out talking about how Democrat senators aren't necessarily joining in on the calls from activists on the left for Sotomayor to retire, but they are publicly expressing a little bit of unease that they might end up seeing a repeat of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who refused to step down in 2014. She ended up staying in her position, and then she died when there was a Republican president. Obviously, it was Donald Trump, and he was able to replace her with Amy Coney Barrett, who's been awesome on the court. And they just want to avoid a repeat of that. They're pointing, though, to Sotomayor merely because she happens to be the oldest on the bench. But at the end of the day, number one, she's not that old. She's 69 years old. They're pointing to the fact that she's a lifelong diabetic. So she should step down while we still have Joe Biden in office so we can ensure it's not a 7-2 conservative majority. I imagine if I'm her, I'm getting really annoyed and even offended, because there's been no indication that, even though I find her to not be the brightest of the Supreme Court justices, she's one of the two I just don't think are particularly intelligent based, at least. And I'm solely basing this on the questions they ask and some of the comments they make, because I listen to the Supreme Court hearings, the oral arguments. I just find it fascinating. And she's just not very impressive yet. I would say the same thing of Justice Jackson, but she's brand new, so I'm not going to say anything beyond, I'll give her some time. It takes some time to do that. I think if you went back and you listen to Clarence Thomas when he first decided to speak, he wasn't all that impressive, but now I think he is. But if I'm her, I'm getting really upset that you're trying to push me out, seemingly out of nowhere. It is a reflection, however, of the fact that Democrats believe that Joe Biden is going to lose, or they think there's a higher likelihood that he's going to lose than maybe they felt before. Because if they were certain that Joe Biden was going to become reelected, well, they wouldn't be having this conversation at all. They wouldn't care if she stays in office, because right now she is a guaranteed vote for the left. Maybe not the fringes of the left, like with trying to get Donald Trump disqualified from a ballot, but very clearly, she is a liberal justice and votes with the liberal majority. If there's another liberal president, then they'll just see that person replaced with a liberal Supreme Court justice, assuming they have control of the Senate. And maybe that's also what's at stake here, why they're talking about it. But Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut, Democrat, had this to say. It was aired this morning on MSNBC.
You know, we should learn a lesson. You know, and it's not like there's any mystery here about what the lesson should be. the old saying, you know, graveyards are full of indispensable people, ourselves in this body included.
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of old people in the Senate, and I certainly agree that if you're not capable of, you know, forming a coherent thought or, you know, standing up and walking down a flight of stairs on your own, probably time to start pushing you out. Joe Biden, that's you. But Sotomayor hasn't given off any even hint that she's not capable of doing this job beyond me just disagreeing with her positions. Again, she's a lifelong diabetic, so why are you bringing that up now? You knew that when you all said she was your choice. And frankly, if you don't want older folks to be on the court because of your concerns that they might die when the opposition party is in power, well, then nominate younger people, right? Just nominate younger people. And they've done that, right? They've done that with Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. She is pretty young. Her age when she was put on the court, I mean, and I say young in relative context here, I think she was 52 when she was put on the court, maybe 51. So, you know, that's young for a Supreme Court justice. You're going to have to get someone who's generally older, because you don't want to have just like, what, some first year lawyer serving on the bench. You want someone who has a lot of experience, not only in the law, but in life as well. And, you know, just looking, it's funny because they say she, and the thing is, and I slightly misspoke when I said that the Justice Sotomayor is the oldest. I meant the oldest Democrat, because she's not the oldest on the actual court, right? She's not the oldest on the court. Sam Alito, for example, is 74 years old. Clarence Thomas, who feels like he's been on the court forever, is 75 years old. Now, on the other hand, you've got Brett Kavanaugh, 59. Amy Coney Barrett, 52. So she, I believe, is the youngest. You know, you have Roberts, the Chief Justice, also, you know, relatively young. For how he comes off, you wouldn't know he's 69 years old, right? The only reason why they're doing this is because Democrats are fearful that Joe Biden is going to lose. And that's obviously a good sign at the end of the day. I'm not really worried about this. I don't think it's likely that Sotomayor would die in the next 5 to 6 years, at least based on what we know already about her and her health. So this seems to be a little bit misplaced. But when you're panicked, I suppose, well, you misplace some of your feelings. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into the big local. But before that, don't forget, our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, wants taxpayers to know the IRS is going after those older cases as aggressively as they are the new cases where you owe money. So if you owe money, be proactive. If you've received a CP-504 form from the IRS, you're going to also want to act right now by calling Greg Nunn of Nunn Better Tax Resolution, N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rance Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for Big Local. It's brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're online at alpineclean.com. It's a part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle and instead focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start in Thurston County. We told you yesterday that there was going to be a big stink over the fact that former Tacoma police officer Christopher Burbank was hired to be a deputy. And lo and behold, it became a giant stink to the point where he's no longer a Thurston County Sheriff's deputy. His family ended up getting death threats, and people in the community, or at least the ones who are pretending to live in Thurston County but actually live in King County, they made a big stink. And the deputy, for a day, ended up offering his resignation. Derek Sanders, the sheriff, said, yes, I accept. Now, Derek Sanders today made a rare mistake. I really like Derek Sanders, but my God, is the comment that he put out, the letter he put out, I think the kids say weak sauce. Is that what they say?
Yeah, they say that.
Okay. What do you know? You probably know as much as I do of what the kids say. But weak sauce, we all know what that means. It was pretty weak sauce. It's a kind of embarrassing letter that you're forced to write or just forced to put your name on, because I don't think he actually wrote this. Now, again, I would vote for him in a heartbeat. I think he is a tremendous sheriff, but I am embarrassed on his behalf. Not that he cares, but it's, let me read you at least in part this letter. When I made the decision to hire Deputy Burbank, I failed to consider the greater community impact and instead made the decision based on business needs to address TCSO's, Thurston County Sheriff's Office, staffing crisis. Furthermore, I entirely misjudged community perception on the investigation and jury process that Deputy Burbank completed. I recognize the harm this has caused to marginalized communities, and I was wrong. Okay, I'll finish in a moment. I almost said something bad. What in God's name are you saying? What does this mean? You hired a deputy, and it immediately had harm against quote-unquote marginalized communities? Which marginalized communities were harmed, and how were they harmed? You mean you heard from a handful of activists who are Black or Latino or Asian or Native American? Take us through specifically what it is you're talking about here. Because this is absurd. No marginalized community was harmed. No one was harmed except for Christopher Burbank. This is a guy who went through the criminal justice system the way that it was supposed to work, under a system that was created to find him guilty, and yet he still was acquitted. Understand, the state made it easier to charge cops because their intent was to placate the Black Lives Matter movement, put cops in jail for simply making a mistake or doing something that you just didn't like. That's it. Had nothing to do with the law. So they charged him. And he was charged, by the way, from Bob Ferguson's office. That's how much of a hit job this was. And he was acquitted by a jury. You hear over and over and over again, folks saying, no justice, no peace. What they mean is, you do what they want, or there will be no peace. That's not justice. It's not justice to say, oh, if he's not found guilty, then we're just going to riot. We're going to make sure that he's never able to work again. What's the point of the justice system? And again, I made this point yesterday. Folks on the left, the ones who don't want him to ever work again, are also the ones who say we should be more open-minded to hiring felons, murderers, rapists, armed robbers. Hey, you don't even get to ask them whether or not they've ever been convicted of a felony for a job interview. Can't do that. Sorry. You can't do that on your application for a rental. Can't ask that question. We don't want that. It's absurd. And yet you're the ones who are here saying for someone who was acquitted, oh, he can't work again. And why in the world is the sheriff leaning into this garbage? Marginalized communities were harmed. Which ones? Let's be specific. Which community? And I don't even mean an identity. Tell me specifically a community in Thurston County that has been harmed by this. And tell me how they've been harmed. What, they saw a photo and they didn't like his hair? They didn't like his hairdo? I mean, if I'm being honest, that harmed me a little bit. He goes on to say, trust is gained in drops and lost in buckets. For those who have lost confidence in me or what we're trying to accomplish at Thurston County Sheriff's Office, I apologize for letting you down. They don't like you because you're a cop. That's it. It has nothing to do with what happened yesterday. It has nothing to do with this hiring. Nothing. Like, not even a little bit. These are the people who are perpetually angry at police. And then he says, I recognize that there are spaces I may no longer be welcome in. And this is a challenging reality for me to accept. What space are you not allowed in? First of all, you're the sheriff. I hope you can go anywhere. But what space are you not allowed in? And for you hiring someone who was acquitted, and they say you can't go into their space any longer, what does that say about them? Doesn't it say more about them than it does about you? What do you have to apologize for? You didn't do anything wrong. I'm embarrassed by this letter. I'm utterly embarrassed. And it does not sound like him at all. This does not sound like the way he speaks. Now, he says he's going to hold a community forum to discuss this issue, which just means he's going to stand up and get yelled at everybody. He's got to do his time in front of a group that will yell at him who don't even live in Thurston County. It'll be attended by folks from Seattle and Tacoma. And we're supposed to pretend that somehow they represent the people of Thurston County. Hey, if there were enough of those activists in Thurston County, Derek Sanders would not be the sheriff right now. That is a fact. Okay? So spare me. Meanwhile, we've got more... this is be a downer of a segment. We got disturbing details out of the death of this poor four-year-old kid. The mother out of Everett is the main suspect. She's been charged. She's being held on $5 million bail. Police say this was very clearly intentional. You can see the defensive wounds on this poor baby. And they say there was reason for her to do this, in their view, according to their investigation, that he was the subject of a custody battle between the suspect and her mother, who didn't think that the child should be in her care. Now, the suspect's name is Janet Garcia. And because the details of this case are so just incredibly horrific, I'm not even going to get into them. But I will tell you that there was something I noticed, and I wasn't the only one who noticed this. I saw coverage on all of the networks of this case. They show her face, and they name her. I remember the coverage of the illegal immigrant who crashed into Trooper Christopher Gadd, and they blurred his face and didn't say his name. Why? Can someone answer that question? Because I haven't seen any of the networks explain why that is. Why the double standard there? Why would you not show one but show the other? The first thing I thought, well, okay, has she been charged and he has? No, they both haven't been charged yet officially. Or, well, he at the time he hadn't been charged and she hasn't been charged. So what exactly is the issue here? Why would you not show the face up because they're in the country illegally? Well, okay, what does that have to do with anything? Speculate, because I can't figure it out.
Yeah,
I'm legitimately thinking all the media outlets obviously treated that death as incredibly sad and tragic and serious, and the coverage otherwise was pretty direct and blunt about who he was. Didn't want to show his face, but they show her face. Someone explain that. What is the logic behind that? It doesn't exist. There is none. Other than, were you taking a political position because you knew he was in this country illegally? Is that the only reason? Again, what bearing does that have on your coverage of the case? It's out there. You're reporting it. He's in jail. He's not going to get out. So what are we doing here? It doesn't make any sense. And again, I wasn't the only one who noticed this. But as soon as I saw the image of Janet Garcia, I was like, oh, wait a minute. What, they're showing her face. And again, I double checked at the time of this. She still hasn't been charged. She's being held on bail, $5 million. It's just weird that, hey, we're going to have that kind of weird double standard here, which doesn't even make sense. Why would you give any kind of coverage, a defense? I don't even know how we could describe it to a guy who's accused of killing a Washington State trooper. What is he deserving of? It's disgusting. And then finally, I have to say, I'm not really in love with this idea. There's a rideshare service that just got announced and implemented in Gig Harbor. It's specifically for Gig Harbor and specifically for portions of the area. It's called the Gig Harbor Runner. And it works just like Uber or Lyft, any of these rideshare companies. You've got an app. You say, pick me up here, drop me off there. In this case, it's only $2. And $2 versus the, you know, $17 it costs for me to go from my barber to the building on every other Friday when I get a haircut makes me want to kill someone. And that's $2, so I should be like celebrating this. Hey, you know, good for you. The reason why I'm not celebrating, it's run by Pierce Transit. This is a service that is taxpayer funded directly competing with a private business, undercutting their work and taking away business from them in an incredibly unfair way. Because when you're running out of a government agency, for the most part, you're looking at your budget as unlimited. Oh, you know, if we go over, don't worry, we'll just charge people higher taxes. We'll just take more money. We'll make something else more expensive. So while they do that, they're undercutting Uber and Lyft. And that just doesn't seem right to me. It's not even if they were charging the market rate, that would be one thing. But to go all the way down to $2 seems just patently unfair to business. And I can't stand Uber. I like Lyft, but I hate Uber. So make sense of that. Now, the reason why they're doing it is they say that the bus service doesn't generally run in the areas that they're going to help out. Okay. And you could create a bus lane there, right? Or is we can't do that? Can't have a bus transit route?
I guess not.
That was not a helpful comment. Give me some analysis.
I got nothing.
Oh, come on, Mr. Conservative over there. You're supposed to stand up for private business. Even if it's Uber. Even if they charge you $97 for two Starbucks coffees.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, they're kind of on my bad side now.
I hate them. I really don't want to defend them. But that's a valid criticism of this. You know, you are undercutting business. And by the way, that means you're also undercutting jobs of people who, you know, live in Pierce County. That just doesn't seem like you're doing the right thing at all to the community, to the business itself. It's just wrong. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text. Speaking of wrong, you get to choose our next story, and you better not be wrong, because one story is about how police are not pressing charges after J.K. Rowling tested a hate crime law in Scotland. Or story number two, it's happening right now. Remember those migrants who demanded that they would get housing or they're going to come to a park in Seattle? Yeah. Guess what they're doing right this literal moment? And it's not just at a park kind of area. It's impacting now a high school. And of course, they're being welcomed with open arms. Just pick that story and let me do it. 1-800-465-8774, your texts.
You picked the topic on the Jason Rand Show.
Indeed, you did pick the topic I asked you to. It's happening right now. We told you yesterday about the illegal immigrants who were staying in a Kent hotel, the Quality Inn, and they had threatened to just go to a park in Seattle if they didn't get their housing situation covered. Now, originally they said, but first, don't worry, we're going to try to raise the money. I guess they just gave up really, really, really quickly, because Jeremy Harris right now is at the scene where Venezuelan refugees evicted from the Kent Hotel due to a lack of funds have now set up an encampment at a Seattle community center connected to Garfield High School. They're right now on the tennis courts. Como reports the group pleaded for help through an online fundraising campaign Monday as they were due to check out of the Quality Inn the following day. Just FYI, when you owe like a whole lot of money or you need to raise a whole lot of money, probably should start the fundraising more than like 12 hours beforehand.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing that out there as a little bit of a tip. Not that I would give money to these people, but just saying. Probably don't want to do it with 12 hours notice. Like, how much money do you have to raise? You know, $43,000. Oh, okay.
They thought people would be more generous, I guess.
You know, all the bigotry in this city. The bigotry, just because they're brown or other. I guarantee you someone says that. I guarantee you someone makes that point. The hotel GM told Como News the refugees' latest hotel stay was funded by the Plymouth Church, which was reportedly connected to the refugees through King County. I guess they decided, you know, we're not going to pay for that anymore. They say in recent months, members of the 240-person group staying at the Quality Inn in Kent approached Seattle City Council members on two occasions. It says to ask for funding. No. They were demanding funding. There's a difference. And they went specifically to Seattle, even though they have no connection to the city. But now I guess they do, right? Now they do. Now, the council member for the Seattle City Attorney, Joy Hollingsworth, who probably does not want to have to deal with this, she's brand new, She just tweeted, "Our office is aware of the migrant asylum seekers who have set up an encampment at Garfield Tennis Courts. We are working with the mayor's office, King County, and service providers to address this situation immediately." Actually, it's really easy to address this situation. Kick them out and arrest them if they don't leave. It's actually really simple. You don't have to allow them to stay. But like I said, even though they signaled yesterday in a statement, you know, this is not a solution, they didn't want to deal with this because it's bad optics, and they will never kick them out. This is not up to the city council, in fairness to Joy Hollingsworth. This has nothing to do with her. She could, of course, amplify the message that we should be stepping up and arresting anyone who chooses to stay. You can't do this. You can't just take over a community center, whether it's one tennis court or several. I mean, they don't tell us yet how many of the 230 or so people have actually showed up, but I'm looking at some of the photos. You know, there are quite a few people. Let me just say that you're not going to be playing tennis for a bit. You're not going to be playing tennis. And of course, no one seems to care that this is taking away space from kids and community members to use. Kind of just like in Chicago and New York, where they decided to give away different community centers to house folks. Except in that case, they made the choice to do that. Here, they're going to make the choice to let them stay. But they just said, yeah, if you don't give us money, we're just going to do it. Why didn't they stay in Kent? Why didn't they go to a park in Kent? Why do you think that is? Any ideas? Say because they're less tolerant of this nonsense.
Because they're less tolerant of this nonsense.
Precisely. They are less. I could not have said it better myself. You could be a talk show host. They are less tolerant in Kent. They're not going to allow this. You think they're going to allow this to happen in Kent or SeaTac or Des Moines? No, of course not. I mean, I wouldn't want to go to a park in Des Moines, all, you know, with all due respect. It's not Tukwila, but you know what I mean. They come here because, hey, guess what? Nothing. You think anything's going to happen? You think the cops are going to be sent there to clear this up? No. No. And in fact, despite the city of Seattle saying the last time they were asked for money, we just don't have it. Want to bet they find it? Want to bet all of a sudden they're going to find more money that will basically be taken away from organizations or programs that you actually use as a citizen of Seattle, as a taxpayer, to give to a bunch of folks who are holding the community center hostage? That's what this is. This is hostage taking. They're taking control of an entire building. And by the way, just for a moment, imagine they were wearing MAGA hats. This would be called an insurrection. This would be called a violent overthrow of a tennis court. That's how they would frame it. And you think they would put up with that? Do you think that they would say, okay, well, you know, they're wandering in the streets of Seattle looking for a place to call home, but no one will have them because of their red hats. And so they took control of the, we're just going to let them stay, because it's compassionate to let them stay in the tennis court. And by the way, if you're them, why don't you find some grass to go on?
They would, yeah, that would probably be more comfortable, yeah.
Why are you going onto the tennis courts? Go in a place that's, like, more comfortable. You're going to be miserable. Well, that's a benefit, I guess, a glass-half-full approach to talking about this. At least they'll be miserable. It will be deeply uncomfortable. Have you ever tried to fall asleep on a tennis court? Let me tell you, it's very difficult. It's very difficult.
I've fallen on a tennis court. That hurts.
Did it hurt? Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine sleeping. Yeah. All night just laying down on this hard... I honestly don't understand why they chose this tennis
strange.
Court. Did they all think, well, we're still a few weeks away from people actually wanting to use the tennis courts on a regular basis? Yeah, you're getting a nice sunny day here or there, but we're still in for some crummy weather for a bit, and then the sun will start. We've got until, what, late June, early July? It's, you know, we got some time. Oh, my God. This madness doesn't end, and it's never going to end. Seriously, it's never going to end. The city's mobilizing resources to address the situation. Hey, if we had more cops, maybe we could send them, but we don't have enough cops on patrol right now in this precinct. This is the East Precinct. I think they have like 17 cops on duty all day today just from that precinct. And this is an area where there's a lot of crime. And I love, by the way, that they're doing this right outside of Garfield High School when, number one, these people are unvetted. You have zero clue who they are. And then number two, what happened to like helping kids from marginalized communities make sure that they have access to after school programs and resources? Like, I guess we're just going to forget that whole thing because you found another marginalized community that you can get behind. because, you know, hashtag intersectional politics. You're going to compare two different groups of people and you're going to judge them. Which one is more marginalized? We normally go with this group, but, oh, you know, I think they're a little bit more marginalized. Let's go with them and completely ignore the other kids that we pretended to care about deeply. Unless, of course, they're in gifted programs. Then we kick them out because there are too many white people. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. It can be just as angry and as annoyed as I just was for this entire segment. Or you can just, you know, you can send me a little smiley face emoji. 1-800-465-8770 is my text message. And you can, of course, follow me on Twitter. Twitter.com/JasonRants, where Elon Musk, he responded to one of my tweets. Maybe we'll talk about it in the After Show podcast.